This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. It's Wednesday, so that means, of course, we check in with Wes Reynolds, who is maybe a little bit disappointed based off of the initial college football playoff rankings. Not because Indiana got disrespected, but I'm sure he would have loved to see a number one by the Hoosiers in that initial poll there for the first time in school history. We'll talk to Wes about some thoughts on the playoff rankings, nothing too crazy. And then we'll check in with Brett Ciancia of Pick Six Previews, as we always do here on Wednesdays. Just a reminder, do continue to give us those five-star ratings, rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. And also a tip of the cap to all of you guys who watch us on YouTube. Record numbers last Thursday for the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. So let's keep that rolling. And of course, Thursday, we will talk with Matt Newmans. We will break down the full Week 11 card. Wes Reynolds and I have a lot of similar thoughts for this upcoming week, a lot of situational angles this week. So we will dive into that here in just a bit. Yes, of course, we did have the first college football playoff rankings unveiled on Tuesday night. And, you know, I think at this point, we know what they are. I do like the initial rankings reveal show just to see how the committee is thinking. I thought there were a lot of similarities to the AP poll. If you look at some of the former BCS projections, also a lot of similarities. I think the thing that popped out to a lot of people, and I understand, and yes, I'm a Notre Dame fan. Go ahead and drink early on in the podcast. Notre Dame being 10, Miami being 18. I understand the outrage and upset nature for Kane fans. The question I have is, and I'm not defending where Notre Dame is. I actually think Oklahoma and Texas probably should be ahead of the Irish. I also think it'll work itself out based off of those two teams' remaining schedules. The question I do have about the situation of Miami and Notre Dame, because it goes deeper than that, is, all right, if Miami's ahead of Notre Dame, which, once again, I think head-to-head should matter, even though Notre Dame's power rating is certainly higher, but you have to play football games. Fair. Miami does have a better win than Notre Dame. But what do you do with the Louisville head-to-head? What do you do with the Virginia head-to-head? Virginia beat Louisville. Louisville beat Miami. Is Notre Dame behind all of those teams? And then Virginia lost to NC State. Notre Dame beat NC State by 29. It kind of is this big circle, and how do you get it all figured out? It's early November. Things will figure themselves out. As we've discussed at plenty on this podcast, we do not fully expect Virginia to run the table. We think they will get tripped up maybe even this weekend against Wake Forest. But the one thing I wanted to focus on based off of the initial rankings was Oregon. And on Monday, Adam Burke and I talked about this Oregon team and kind of posed the question of how good is Oregon? We've seen them embrace the bully role. That Oklahoma State 69-3 game when Mike Gundy couldn't shut his mouth pregame, and that led to Dan Lanning getting angry Hulk style and winning by 66 points. But what do we know about Oregon right now? They have a game at home against Indiana. They lost by 10. Iowa has a game at home against Indiana. They lost by 5. And I know that was that late weird situation where Fernando Mendoza ran back, and Iowa has another loss. So I'm not saying that Iowa should be ranked against higher than Oregon, but what I am looking at, and the one thing that we saw based off of the odds, and that's what this podcast, as you know, is about. It's a betting podcast. What shifted last night based off of the rankings? And believe it or not, the big shift was Oregon to make or miss the playoff. On Monday, when we recorded, and I mentioned to Adam that I was staring at Oregon to miss the playoff at plus 275, they were a minus 350 to make the playoff on Monday. Today, they're minus 220 to make the playoff and plus 180 to miss. And I think a lot of that has to do where Oregon came in the initial rankings. They were number 9. And then you look at the schedule at Iowa this weekend, home to Minnesota, home to USC at Washington. This is an Oregon team that now you have to question, do they have to win all of those games? Can they afford another loss. If they go 3-1 down the stretch with one loss, where do they stack up amongst the rest of the Big Ten teams? If they lose to Iowa, how does that look next week in the rankings? I think Oregon, of the teams that we look at, to me, looks a bit vulnerable, knowing their schedule is pretty challenging. Do they get in with two losses? We don't know how everything's going to play out. It certainly is possible, but could you see USC, who's 19th, if they get a win on the road at Oregon, do they jump the Ducks? What about Washington? If they win at home against Oregon in the regular season finale, they currently have two losses at Michigan, home to Ohio State. And then you've got Iowa. I am confident in saying there will be three teams from the Big Ten making the college football playoff. I just don't know who it's going to be. And I think the team, in my opinion, that is a little bit on alert based off of the rankings that we saw unveiled on Tuesday night is Oregon. And we saw a pretty decent shift in the odds to make the college football playoff. So the Oregon situation is one that I would monitor there. How does that ultimately play out? I know there was a lot of folks upset about Texas and Oklahoma being behind Notre Dame. And I think that's a fair argument. Notre Dame's best win, once again, is USC. They have been dominant in their wins. I know they played with their food this past Saturday against Boston College. That was a horrific performance, in my opinion, by Notre Dame. But Texas and Oklahoma, it's going to work itself out. And that's the thing I would say about a lot of these rankings. If Texas wins out, they're going to be ahead of Notre Dame. If Oklahoma wins out, they're going to be ahead of Notre Dame. Why? Oklahoma plays Alabama on the road next week. Texas plays Georgia and Texas A&M. It's going to figure itself out. Now, should the committee be basing it off of that? Absolutely not. But I do think ultimately it will play itself out here. So we'll see what unfolds. I've kind of gotten to the point where I don't get all too fired up based off of initial rankings. It is a television show, as we all know. And at the end of the day, the committee kind of make up the rules on the fly, and that's what they tend to do. So Oregon, though, that was the one takeaway for me. Be careful sitting there. You win out, obviously you're in good shape. You lose one of those three games or one of those four games, things could get a little bit tricky there for the Oregon Ducks. So we'll see ultimately how it all plays out here in the college football playoff. But a lot of football still to be played. We'll get into games and situational spots here with Wes Reynolds in just a moment. But just a reminder, our friends at Rainbow Authentics, you see me wearing the hat every single episode, have been a proud sponsor of this podcast all season long. They're the official source of game-used apparel, autographs, and trading cards for the University of Hawaii. Every item tells a story, whether it's that game-worn jersey, a sign ball, or unique collectibles. You'll be capturing the moment and owning a piece of Hawaii sports history. Beyond memorabilia, Rainbow Authentics is committed to supporting the community. Their mission is rooted in empowering student athletes and coaches, strengthening local programs, and giving back to Hawaii with pride. So check them out. They've got some new merchandise coming to the site very soon. Tokyo Toe Line. Mahalo to our friends over at Rainbow Authentics, rainbowauthentics.com. They've been a proud sponsor of this podcast all year long. Shout out, by the way, to the folks on the island. Hawaii basketball, as a 12.5-point underdog, almost pulled off a stunner over Oregon on Tuesday night. And then how about the stunner of all stunners, Hawaii Pacific, the D2 program out there in Honolulu, going to Boise State and beating the Broncos. There was no point spread for that game, but what a win. 79-78 for the Sharks. Our good friend Koo at Hawaii Sports Radio is a proud alum of HPU. So a pretty cool moment there on Monday night as Hawaii Pacific, the D2 program, pulled off the stunner of all stunners. All right, quick break. When we come back, we will talk to Wes Reynolds. We'll get his thoughts on Indiana's ranking coming in at number 2. Is he disappointed? And how about that sandwich spot down in Stark, Vegas? Will we need more cowbell yet again? We'll dive into all of the games that Wes likes next right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And we're back. It is Wednesday. Wednesdays with Wes. Wes Reynolds joins us now with, I had my speech prepared, the number one team in all the land. And they come in at number two. Still not bad. Still not bad. You can make the argument they deserve to be one. I would make that, but it'll all get resolved, certainly. But Wes Reynolds, a week from today, I will be making my maiden voyage to Assembly Hall, and I'm so excited to go to a basketball game at a football school.
It is, in fact, a football school. The merchandise at some of the shops in Bloomington now say so. But and Tim, I was just thinking about that this morning with the CFP rankings being released last night. You and I know, and I think everybody that consumes this podcast knows, it's a TV show. It's about debate and building up the college football playoff and, you know, if there's going to be any movement in the rankings going on. So it's not really, I guess, early on that big of a deal. But it kind of was a big deal because I wanted to see the number one by Indiana's name for the first time ever in school history. So that did not happen, despite the fact that they do have two road wins against top 20 ranked teams. Iowa ranked in the top 20, by the way, and not ranked in the AP poll. And Oregon, of course, number nine. But it is Ohio State. They felt that the line play on both sides of the ball has been better for Ohio State. Maybe they're right. Maybe they're wrong. I don't know. But yeah, would have liked to seen Indiana number one, but they are number two, and you know, maybe gives them that little bit of motivation going forward.
Look, Cignetti doesn't need any motivation. On the tailgate show on Saturday, I played the clip of Cignetti talking about Maryland, and then I compared it to some of the quotes that Lou Holtz made against about Navy back in the early 90s. And I love it, man. They just go out and they obliterate teams. It would have been cool to see Indiana number one. I opened the podcast talking about the rankings. I think really the only team that are... that has a bit of a gripe, in my opinion. Now, I know Miami fans are not happy, but I think Oregon is not in a great spot. You saw their odds shift a little bit, but it is fun. If we can, you know, stop the count right now, we have Notre Dame and Provo, and then Notre Dame taking on Indiana on New Year's Day. I'd take that again. A little rematch, a little Indiana State Championship rematch, Wes?
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned about Cignetti with the motivation. One of the clips that is still giving me some comic relief, of course, the Indiana, the big win at Maryland, 55-10 on Saturday. We broke Testudo, Tim. Did you see the clip where Testudo, the Maryland mascot, was like, he was leaving. He was like leaving the stadium, like leaving the field when the game was still going on, kind of gave a wave. It was like, we broke the turtle, man. Because I think it was Brad Nessler on the commentary goes, that tortoise has had enough. You know, so we broke the turtle on Saturday. See if Indiana will break the Nittany Lion.
Well, let's get to that game. We always like to talk some Indiana with you. And, you know, I give credit to Adam Burke for pointing this out on the podcast earlier this week. Back in 2023, late October 2023, Indiana took on Penn State in Happy Valley. Penn State closed as a 31-point favorite. Last year, they did not play, Wes. And now Indiana is a 15-point favorite, a 46-point shift in the point spread in 2 years. I mean, the power of Cignetti and this program, unbelievable to think about where we are from a 31-point dog to a 15-point favorite in 2 years.
And I think I remember that game. I believe that game was played at Penn State when Tom Allen was still the Indiana head coach, now the defensive coordinator at Clemson. And Indiana made a field goal to like get it tied early in the fourth quarter. And he was like, yeah, like we had just won the game because they had just tied. But you know, a lot of things have changed here. And Penn State last week, they hung for a half. They were good enough for 30 minutes. And it's like, okay, are they going to hang in here? And no, they weren't going to hang in. It was all Ohio State in the second half. But Ethan Grunkemeyer, how about this to start your college career? Your first two starts are at Iowa and at Ohio State. It's a pretty tough road to hoe here. So now he at least is at home. where he has a supportive environment, those fans that are still going to be coming on Saturday, boy, that's hard to believe that this is 9-0 against 3-5, three and five on the record. So we wouldn't have thought that. We thought this was going to be a high leverage game, just like we did last week, but maybe they'll still end up that way. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, look, I have a buddy of mine who I exchanged texts with about, you know, his power ratings and how he bets. And he goes, I don't even handicap Indiana games anymore. I mean, it's just the numbers just don't matter, Wes. I mean, I know they almost and it kind of leads us into Iowa, Oregon, because like, are we at the point where Iowa deserves some more credit? And I know the committee ranked them at 20, and they're not ranked right now in the AP. And they're currently a 6.5-point underdog to Oregon, you know, at home. I'm curious your handicap of this game. The weather is going to be a little crappy. I think it's going to be windy and rainy throughout the game. It's going to be in the mid-40s. It's not like, but I will say this, and I think I heard Jeff Schwartz, of course, who has worked with us at VSIN and former Oregon offensive lineman. It's not like Oregon plays in some, you know,
no,
tropical location. Well, Eugene, Oregon can get pretty crappy rainy.
The famous saying up there is it never rains in Autzen. I must have heard that about 1,000 times when I went up there over that weekend, and it did drizzle. I was like, you lied to me. You know, you lied to me on that. It does, in fact, rain in Autzen. I wasn't there, of course. It wasn't the Wisconsin game where it was like a torrential downpour. Oh. And they had the photo of like the sad cheerleader with the rain going all down, even though, you know, they had the Dancing Bears and the Grateful Dead theme that weekend. But going back to this game at Iowa, I did take a little bit of the Hawkeyes at 6.5. I don't think it's going to get to 7. I think that get gobbled up immediately. I think Iowa is getting a little bit disrespected here. Maybe not so much by the committee, but this is a team with a really good defense. The offense, they always, you know, they're not going to, you know, be like North Texas and put up like 80 points or something. But, you know, their defense is always good. Phil Parker always has a good game plan. They're always good on special teams. And they are, again, with kick returns and block punts and block field goals and the whole deal. And Oregon's got a little bit, you know, some injuries for their depth on the offensive side of the ball. Moore, of course, is going to go had the nose issue, but I think this is a tough spot for the Ducks. I really do. And, you know, they've gotten a little bit of the early money, but I think the resistance has kind of started. So this line has really stayed at 6 or 6.5. I like the Hawkeyes here. I think that this is not an easy trip for Oregon.
No, and, you know, like I said, I opened up the podcast briefly talking about the shift we saw in the market. We actually talked about it prior to the rankings coming out. Oregon, I think, as a team, and I mentioned this already, at number 9, they don't feel safe when you look at their remaining schedule with at Iowa, home to USC, and at Washington. So we'll see how it plays out. You know, preseason, Indiana-Penn State was certainly on our radar to be one of the biggest games of this weekend, maybe of the entire college football season. And this next game is always one of the biggest games of the college football season, but Brian Kelly has already been relieved of his duties. They're not ranked right now. You've got LSU at Alabama. And, you know, we've talked about it a lot here on this podcast, Wes. You and I like to look for these situational spots. The fired coach bump so far this year, 7-2 ATS for the teams playing their first game post-coach firing. We saw Florida get the cover, and I know that was a topic of discussion amongst many in the gambling world, how that game ended. But what do you make of this spot down in Tuscaloosa on Saturday night with the Tide laying double digits here?
Yeah, and by the way, I felt Florida, and maybe this is being self-serving because you and I were both on that side, they were still the right side. Even though Gunnar Stockton, you know, gave us a little bit of gift at the one-yard line, I felt...
Could have done that against Auburn,
I know,
saying.
And he didn't, but he learned his lesson. He at least learned his lesson there, and the Gators get the cover, but not the win. And Gators also caught that pass, by the way, that they ruled incomplete, so...
Oh, yeah, that was terrible.
Nevertheless, kind of the same scenario here with LSU at Alabama. You have Frank Wilson, who is taking over as the interim head coach. Frank Wilson, by the way, much like Billy Gonzalez, like how I mentioned last week that he was a Florida guy and he was on 3 different staffs. Frank Wilson, New Orleans guy, so a Louisiana born, Louisiana bred, was also on the national championship staff with Les Miles, coached there, I believe, 2010 to 2015, head coach at McNeese State down there in Lake Charles, Louisiana. So he is an LSU guy, so he's got a lot of pride, and he knows, hey, this is, you know, I've only got a few games to be the LSU head coach. I'm not getting hired, you know, for this job. We'll see what the governor has to say, Governor Landry down there in Louisiana. I guess he has a say in the matter. But, you know, he knows he's only going to be the LSU coach for the rest of this season. But he gets to say, I was the head coach at LSU, even if it's an interim tag. And I think he's going to take pride in that. I think his players are going to take pride in that. This team, the defense has been the story. The defense has been good. The offense is not, because Neusmeyer, I don't think, has been 100% really all year. But I took LSU plus 10.5. I'd still take them at 10, which is pretty widely available in the market. Pressure's more on Alabama. Pressure's off LSU now. Now it's not, okay, the coach got fired. You know, we know where we are. We just got to finish the season as best as we can. Pressure's more on Alabama, obviously, being right there in the mix at the top, near the top of the CFP rankings. So I think they rally for Frank Wilson here. And I would be very shocked if you got a poor effort from LSU on Saturday.
I agree. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's just a matter of, does the dam break? Alabama, you know, it's funny. We talk about Hawaii all the time here on the podcast. And under Timmy Chang, they've been a cash cow at home, ATS 18-6-1 since the start of his tenure in 2022. You know who has an 18-6-1 ATS record at home since that time? Alabama. So they have covered quite well at home. You know, speaking of that fired coach bump situation, Florida, Georgia, let's get to Georgia, because, you know, I like to look at these sandwich spots. We joke, we have a bit on VSiN Primetime and the Tailgate Show. We go to the Murray Delicatessen, and Georgia seems to be in a bit of a sandwich spot here, right? You've got this rivalry game, the cocktail party, and then next week, a massive one at home against Texas. And in between, you got to go down to Stark Vegas. You got to listen to those damn cowbells ringing all day long. Is this a spot to look at Mississippi State? They got a nice come from behind win against Arkansas last week in the fourth quarter. That team is not quitting. Do you get a good effort from the Bulldogs of Mississippi State against the Bulldogs of Georgia?
I believe you do. And Mississippi State at 5-4. Could have beaten, could have won at Florida, should have beaten Texas a couple weeks ago. We're right there against Tennessee, lost in overtime. This team could already be 6-3 or 7-2. So they're certainly, I think, competitive. They did have to come back against Arkansas last week. I actually did kind of like Arkansas in that spot. But here's a statistical anomaly here for Arkansas. I believe Arkansas had like, as I'm trying to gather it here, 18 penalties for 193 yards Arkansas had against Mississippi State. They had 8 personal fouls in that game. Like, that's impossible to get 8 personal fouls, but they did, and Mississippi State came back. I already bet this. I'm not getting the best of the number because now you're seeing some 8.5. I'm thinking, though, Tim, this is going to be on our buddy SVP's winner segment on Thursday night, just so he could say Foo Fighters, like Christopher Walken, you know, more cowbell. Foo Fighters.
Is the emphasis on the foo or the fighters?
It's varied.
It's on the fighters.
It's actually varied, because one time it was on the foo, and then the next time it was on the fighters. And Dave Grohl, of course, the lead singer of that band, did a very funny video of that. You could find that on the social. I think SVP and Stanford Steve played it on the pod. But he's going to say more cowbell, and we need more cowbell. Give me Mississippi State.
All right. Sticking with some situational spots, you know, we are unfortunately in times where people are smart, and I hate that, because we're not getting double digits right now in Hartford, Connecticut. And this is the spot of all spots. You look at Duke, they're very live to win the ACC with everything that unfolded last weekend. Next week, they play Virginia at home. Currently the highest ranked ACC team. We'll get to the Hoos and my disdain for that program in just a little bit. But Duke beats Clemson for the first time in 45 years on the road, 46-45. Horrendous call gets him the win, but we move on. And now you got to go to UConn and take on a, I'll say this, and Humans always makes fun of me for usage of the word feisty, but this is a feisty bunch there. And Joey Fagnano is a good quarterback. Jim Mora Jr. is a good coach. And this is kind of their Super Bowl. I really want double digits, but the situation is horrendous for Duke here at UConn this Saturday.
Yeah, I took 9. I did not get the, there was an 11.5, I believe, on Sunday on the opener, but
that, I thought I saw a 13, yeah, Wes.
That damn NFL like interferes and I miss all these openers. Because I'm concentrated on that. It's like this damn pro stuff. They don't wait. They don't wait till Monday. They grab these right away. And kudos to them if you grab the double digits with Connecticut, because I think they are the right side here. Connecticut had that bad loss at Rice a couple weeks ago. And then Rice, really got hammered on Friday night against Memphis, which kind of surprised me with Memphis off that big win over USF. And then they rebounded to beat UAB. Of course, interim coach, it is the son of the late Chris Mortensen, Alex Mortensen, that's a coach there now. And Ron might get the full-time job, by the way. But I do like UConn here against Duke. I think Duke, that's just the ACC, Tim. And you followed ACC football for years, as have I. When a team gets prosperity, that's when you go against him. It seems like it always kind of works out that way. Like, who's the team to beat? Like, earlier this year, it was Florida State. Then they lose to Virginia. And then it was Miami. And then they lose to Louisville. And then it was Georgia Tech. And they lost last week at NC State. So now maybe it may be Duke or Virginia. And I know we'll get to Virginia in a moment. They can't stand prosperity. It's like, whoever is left standing is just going to be in the ACC title game, and I have no idea who it is. But the teams that are right there with everything on the line and everything to play for, those are the teams I like to go against in this conference. So give me UConn.
All right, let's stay in the conference, and let's get to Virginia. They take on Wake Forest. Wake Forest got absolutely obliterated last Saturday by Florida State, and that was a spot I was kicking myself. You look at numbers, and sometimes they tell you the story. Florida State was laying double digits. Wake Forest, clearly a letdown spot. I got spooked off by the number, and Florida State wins by, a million. And then you've got this Virginia team, and we discussed it on Monday. I don't need to relitigate the bad beat there with Cal, but this has been a team so fortunate to continue to prosper, and they have this game against Duke waiting in the wings. I know they got their ass kicked last week, but Wake Forest is a capable bunch, and there's still a couple sevens out there. What do you make of Wake Forest at Virginia?
I did take 7, and we talked about going against Wake Forest last week off that big win, and Florida State absolutely dropped the hammer on him. And Tommy Castellanos got healthy. That line went to 10, actually went to 10.5 or 11, I think, on the close, maybe even higher.
Mm-hmm.
And they just destroyed Wake Forest. And Wake Forest, they're playing the two quarterbacks. They're playing Robbie Ashford, who's more the runner. They're playing DeShaun Purdy, the Charlotte transfer, who's a little bit more of the thrower. But this isn't necessarily me going to war with Wake Forest, even though I think Jake Dickert's done a good job in his first year there, 5-3, just one away from bowl eligibility. I think Virginia's been very fortunate, and I think their defense is gettable. And I think that we've seen that all year, is that they give up a ton of yards. Yeah, Chandler Morris can fling it, but they don't get a lot of stops on that side unless they're getting lucky and getting turnovers like they did against Cal late. So the Demon Deeks, I think rebound here. And now with Virginia, because they've been kind of the surprise team, now they get the attention. Now they're getting the national attention, and they're getting the media kind of like, hey, Virginia, look at this. They've got a football
program.
They
were in the bracket, Wes.
Yes, they got a football program again. And that, I think, is almost like the kiss of death. Like, we're talking about the wheel of destiny with the ACC. Give me the Demon Deacons taking the touchdown here.
All right, let's stay in the ACC and a fan base that is not thrilled with their coach and also not thrilled with the committee is Miami. And I get it. You're 18th. You beat Notre Dame head to head. You've got a better win than Notre Dame head to head. It's a weird situation where Miami lost to Louisville. Louisville lost to Virginia. Virginia lost to NC State. Notre Dame beat NC State by 29. It's like, I don't know. It's all jumbled. How do you make everyone happy? I think they were probably a little bit underranked, but if they can rise up, do they end up at 10-2 threatening to get into the playoff. We'll see how it all plays out. But that all being said, they play Syracuse. Syracuse, I don't know what that was they threw out there at quarterback on Friday night against UNC. It was Halloween. Maybe they dressed up a lacrosse player and said, hey, you're a quarterback here tonight. But that was horrendous. 28.5-29 right now for Miami. Do they get right against the Cuse?
I think they do. I laid 28. I would probably still lay a little bit less going through that four touchdown number. And I don't like to lay points a lot with Mario Cristobal, but this might be the spot where he could take it out on somebody. And Syracuse, by the way, has made a lot of changes to their coaching staff. The wide receiver coach is no longer there. Josh Gattis is now taking over his roles. Nunzio Campanile, if I'm pronouncing that right, the QB coach, is now the tight ends coach. Mike Johnson is the quarterback coach. Josh Gattis is now the receiver coach. So there's a lot of switching going on. And Fran Brown, you know, they won 10 games last year, and I think surprised a lot of people. And reality has set in. They got hit hard in the portal and just didn't maybe get the guys that were going to, you know, be able to replace them right away. So this was I thought this would be a rebuild for Syracuse. I didn't think they'd be 3-6 at this point, but I just think that there's going to be a lot of confusion. Who's doing what? It looks like a disorganized operation, not only on the field, on offense at the quarterback position, but also on the coaching staff. I think maybe this is one where the U takes out their anger. Hopefully, you know, if you're laying it, they start out faster than they did against Stanford. Remember, that was 7-7. At the half. And then what, they go on like a 35-0 run in the second half. They tacked on that late touchdown where they could have taken a knee at the end, but nevertheless, it was a cover. So I think they might be an angry bunch here, and they're going to get right against Syracuse.
Yeah, over this summer, if you were listening to the podcast as we were going through our win totals, which has been off to a good start, but unfortunately, it does look like the Nebraska win total is in some trouble after Dylan Raiola got hurt. But we did take under 5.5 on Syracuse, so that would clinch this, assuming Miami takes care of business as a 4+ touchdown favorite. All right, let's stay in the ACC. And, you know, last week I was sitting on my couch, Wes, and I'm thinking to myself, what in God's name is going on with my Irish in Chestnut Hill? This is a little uncomfortable here. And Notre Dame eventually pulls away. They win by, 15. But it was an ugly game by Notre Dame. Did not get anywhere close to covering that enormous number. And now you've got SMU coming to town, fresh off of the overtime win over Miami. You're traveling to Boston College. It's an early start for this game. I believe it's a noon kick. It just has the makings for kind of a weird spot. Circa at 11, market 10.5. What do you make of this one, the Ponies traveling to Chestnut Hill?
Well, Bill O'Brien certainly got surly with a local reporter earlier this week with what he was asked, and obviously not happy with this 1-8 start at BC, but I took BC plus 11.5. I still think there's some 11 out there, which I would take. Anything double digits or better, I would take. SMU beats the U. And, we ended up betting that last week, and they not only covered, but went outright. And now SMU going to lowly Boston College. By the way, Rhett Lashley signed his contract. He was certainly going to be one of the hot candidates on the coaching carousel. He signs that big extension down there in Dallas. Oh, by the way, they have money down there. Watch the Pony Access documentary on ESPN or ESPN Plus, the old 30 for 30. They got money at SMU, by the way. And they spend some of it on Rhett Lashley, this time not on the players, although they're now with NIL, they're still spending on the players. Just up front about it. They've got a payroll to meet. It was the famous line in that one. But I do like BC here. I still think they're fighting, Tim. Like, they were competitive against Notre Dame. They covered and competed against Louisville. And that game was actually close early in the fourth quarter, right after Louisville got off that Miami win. And they were certainly in a little bit of a temporary sell spot there. BC is still trying to figure it out. They've switched their quarterback at least a couple times here. And I think that they give a big effort. Now Bill O'Brien's like, nobody's down. We're fighting. We're competing. We'll see. I'm going to hold him to his word there on Saturday, betting Boston College. But I think SMU, and they're still in the mix, by the way, to get in that ACC title game for a second year in a row. But to me, they were a little sloppy last week. And one thing SMU cannot do, and it was readily apparent last week against Miami, they can't run the ball. They can't run the ball at all. Like, it had to be all Kevin Jennings last week. And, you know, I think you live dangerously when you can't be at least a little bit balanced. So BC Eagles for me, a very ugly underdog early in that 9 a.m. Pacific window.
That is definitely an ugly underdog. And I got a little bit of a humble pie because Chris Vanini had mentioned early in the week about a possible upset of SMU over Miami. And I tweeted our friend, and you'll hear from him soon, Brett Ciancia's team page of SMU. I said, what does SMU do well? Well, apparently they do something well enough because they were able to beat Miami right in overtime. So a little bit of a humble old takes exposed pie there for me, which sometimes gets the best of us. I was laughing, Wes, before we started recording, because we were running through your games and so many of them are on my card. And that's not surprising. You and I bet very similarly. And one of the spots that I really liked this week was in West Point. Army has taken on Temple. And look, Temple gave up 600 plus yards last week to East Carolina. But this is a Temple team that has faced the triple option before, should have beaten Navy at home earlier this season. They lost in a late touchdown and two-point conversion. And then you've got Army off of the Air Force win coming back home. So what do you make of this spot? Temple off an ugly loss, Army off of a big old win against Air Force, and the Black Knights are laying a touchdown.
Yeah, Temple gave up 614 yards and 45 points. So sign me up, right, Tim? And that's exactly what we're going to do here. Casey Keeler came from Sam Houston State. I think he's done a good job. 5-4 back in the Delco area where he is from. They've got three games left at Army, Tulane. After a bye week, they have Tulane at home and at North Texas. I think Temple's going all in here to get bowl eligible. And then this might be the best chance of the three that they have to get that sixth victory against an Army team off the win. And man, credit to Army. Army laid for getting that big first down pass play down the field to get in field goal range and knock off Air Force. Air Force might have mismanaged that a little bit late in the game in terms of the clock. But Army, it's the same thing with service academies as favorites. You're a little bit tepid on laying them as underdogs. Go to the window, because that's tended to work out that way for about the last 20 plus years. So I think Army being a favorite here, a little bit cause for concern for these guys, because they're a tough team. Like, when they get behind, it's tough. It is tough for them to come back. And I believe they were favored over North Texas at home, or were they favored over North Texas? I cannot remember.
I thought it was like a 1.5 point dog.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
And didn't get there. And then of course, lost at home to Tarleton State to open the season. But yeah, there's still some sevens out there. It's probably worth a buy. You get maybe a cheap one minus 115 if you want to take the seven. But I do like Temple here. I'm going to buy off that awful performance last week. Low total, by the way, 46.5. And Temple is, they've hung in a couple of these games. And you mentioned, I thought, a very important point that they face Navy in the triple option. So the prep should be at least relatively similar this week.
Yeah, and for those of you who listen to Wes and listen to Todd Furman, I tailed him on the Army under. Boy, after the Tarleton State loss, I thought we were on easy street. Kansas State did not do us any favors. This would be a nice double result if Temple could not only cover, but get the outright win, because that would clinch the under for Army's season win total. So, Wes, I call this the Stacy Nolan recap, because he reached out and asked us to recap games when you were on. So I like to try to keep it neat here. So let's run through the games that you've discussed, and we'll say yay or nay, and we'll go in the order I've written them down. SMU at Boston College, BC plus 11.
Yeah. Did Stacy send us any money, by the way? Apparently he is the sponsor of this final segment here. But BC plus 11. I took 11.5. There's still some 10.5. Anything 10 or above, I would take with BC.
Army taking on Temple. We're hooting with 7 in the Owls.
We are, Army off that Commander-in-Chief Trophy game victory. Obviously, Army-Navy will decide that at the end. So give me the Temple Owls.
Indiana, Penn State. Are we doing anything with this game that we opened up with right now? Your Hoosiers laying 15.
I took 15 and a half. Indiana does have some injuries, by the way. We'll see. They keep them very quietly. They're that security is kept tighter than our war plans and our nuclear secrets, apparently, because they don't say anything. Because I've got well-sourced people there, and they're like, I don't know anything. And they'll usually tell me. And they'll usually say, yeah, this is happening. This is happening. This happened at practice or whatever. Aiden Fisher, Elijah Surratt, obviously where we had some injuries last week. It may be precautionary, but Indiana's starting to get banged up, Tim, and their depth will get tested at some point, and it might be this weekend at Happy Valley.
Georgia at Mississippi State. Will we be wearing gold-plated diapers and asking for more cowbell like Bruce Dickinson?
And we'll be listening to Foo Fighters during this game. More cowbell. Give me Mississippi State over Georgia in a very tough sandwich spot.
Oregon and Iowa, some inclement weather possible there in Iowa City. Hawkeyes catching 6.5.
Hawkeyes at Kinnick, dangerous home underdog. And they're probably, I wonder what the price is or the prop is for them to score like a special teams touchdown. Because I'd want to bet the yes, because they seemingly always do that in these low scoring games. And then you've bet the under and it's a low scoring game. And it's like, oh, my God, now you got to sweat it because they returned a kickoff or something or got a defensive touchdown. But yeah, give me the Hawkeyes here. Oh, I think a tough spot for Oregon.
Syracuse, Miami, the Hurricanes not happy about where they are ranked in the college football playoff initial rankings. They're laying 4 touchdowns here against the Cuse.
Yeah, I lay it with Miami here. I still think that they've got a little bit. They're still not out of the playoff discussion, even though they took a big hit at SMU last week. I think they lay out Syracuse. Syracuse, a lot of changes on that coaching staff. And if they start that lacrosse quarterback again, hell, lay 40 with Miami.
Speaking of lacrosse, Duke's got a pretty good lacrosse program. And right now, I know our friend, the madman, Chris Massaro, is thrilled where his Duke future sits. He's got a 16-1 ticket on the Blue Devils. This is a non-conference game. Weird spot to go up to the rent and take on UConn.
Yeah, I like UConn up in stores here. I have a worse number at 8.5. There's some 9.5 out there. It's just the ACC. Teams can't stand prosperity. And every time it's like, okay, a team is right there and everything's going good, they get beat. And that's been the pattern not only this year, but seemingly, by and large, with the exception of a couple dominant Clemson years, seemingly that's been the pattern for this conference.
Well, we like to reference our guy, Scott Van Pelt, anytime he picks Wake Forest, he goes, ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, go Deeks. Wake Forest catching a touchdown against UVA.
Yeah, UVA, you wonder when the other shoe's going to drop. And credit to them, Tony Elliott, his club has played very well, but they've gotten very fortunate in a lot of games. We're very fortunate to cover against Cal, and we're very fortunate at Louisville, where they should have lost. Just Louisville kept turning over the ball, so the Deeks got to avoid that, but I'll take the 7 with Wake Forest. I think this is a danger spot for Virginia.
This feels like the Raycom Jefferson Pilot game of the week on CW when I was growing up there.
Is there Tim Brandt and Dan Bonner on the call for Wake and Virginia?
Sponsored by Food Lion.
Yes.
and Bojangles. Before I knew what Bojangles was, I'm like, what the hell is this restaurant that you keep advertising? All right, lastly, let's go to a game near and dear to the heart of our good friend Jimmy Ott, LSU and Alabama. Do the Bayou Bengals get that fired coach bump on Saturday night in T-Town?
I think so. I think they're going to play hard for Frank Wilson, who is on the Les Miles staff in the mid-2010s, a New Orleans guy, head coach at McNeese State. Like, he bleeds purple and gold here, and I don't think LSU is going to give up the fight. They're both, by the way, off the bye week. Alabama has the pressure of the playoff. LSU just trying to finish at least a halfway decent season. I think for this one, if this wasn't a rivalry game, like if LSU was playing Kentucky or something, I might go against them. But they're playing Alabama. They're playing down there at Bryant-Denny. I think that they're going to be ready. We'll see who the next coach is going to be. I know that there's a former coach that would love to say, go Tigers, one more time. But I don't know if he will be considered. We'll see what Governor Landry and the Board of Trustees guys want to do.
All right. Follow him on Twitter at WesReynolds1. It's Wednesdays with Wes. Wes, always appreciate it, sir.
You bet, Tim. Thanks for having me, as always.
There he is, Wes Reynolds. Quick break. Brett Ciancia, Pick 6 Previews, will join us next right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back, and as promised, the man who creates Pick 6 Previews, Pick 6 Plus, up now on his website. Brett Ciancia joins us right now. You know, for those of you watching with us on YouTube, Brett lives in lovely Pennsylvania. He's got the foliage in the background. We had to shift him away because the sunlight was beaming in too much. And then when you went to go shift your position, Brett, you had this beautiful tree with all the red leaves. I was very jealous and thinking back to my time on the East Coast. It looks very picturesque there at the Ciancia Estate.
Yeah, thanks so much. Yeah, here at Pick 6 headquarters here, southeastern Pennsylvania. Beautiful time of year. Not so much for the football teams, unfortunately, with Penn State and the Eagles going through some struggles. But yeah, beautiful foliage this time of year. It's been great.
Well, that helps. Yeah, that helps out the people with the losses. Well, it leads us into, and we like to do a little bit of recap before we look ahead. It leads us into Ohio State, Penn State, dominant performance by Ohio State. And I always love to check in on your game grades and how these games spit out based off of your formula. So your number one performance of the week was Ohio State. So where did they come out after that victory against Penn State last Saturday?
Yeah, so in this one, Ohio State got their ninth straight win over Penn State, 13 out of the last 14 times. It's really been a one-way rivalry. Usually Penn State keeps it close into the fourth quarter. This time they got a great a lucky fumble there at the end of the first half, cashed it in for a touchdown to make it 17-14. You thought maybe it's going to get tight in Columbus, but then Ohio State really steamrolled them in the second half. The passing game really stood out for me, from Julian Sayin to Carnell Tate to Jeremiah Smith. You know, I've been seeing online about how this passing attack isn't explosive or throwing the ball down the field. You got to watch this team. They're doing exactly that. Multiple great throws down the field, one of them up the seam. He's number one in the whole country in quarterback rating, and that accounts per play and per pass. So really phenomenal job. He's really grown as a quarterback. So the passing attack really stood out to me. And then the overall game grade, you're right, it was number one this week, number three over the whole season, all games, all Power Four games. So one of the most dominant performances of the season. And they have distanced themselves as the number one overall team in my formula.
Also, Indiana just continues to hammer everybody that they face. And I know this Indiana performance over Maryland, because it was such dominance, they are now, I believe, three of the top 15 performances this year per your game grader are by the Hoosiers.
Yeah. So if Ohio State's number one, you got to put Indiana number two. They're playing really efficient, clean football, both sides of the ball. Every week they're blowing out their opponent. When you watch Indiana, it looks like they have 13 guys on the field every play. It's just like they're everywhere at all times. They're making the right reads. They're not making any mistakes. So really just a phenomenal coaching job, I think, so far by Kurt Cignetti. It's been documented pretty well, but it could be one of the best coaching turnarounds in college football history. This time around, he not only is beating up on the below average teams, but he has that Oregon win on his resume, and we'll see how he does against Penn State this week in Happy Valley. But yeah, Ohio State 1, Indiana 2, A&M 3. I think that's how you have to have it right now.
You know, we've talked about it a little bit. The rankings come out on Tuesday night. It's kind of a dog and pony show. Doesn't necessarily give us a ton to discuss from a betting standpoint. Maybe you fade some teams one way or the other if they're a little bit overrated, but I'm really curious about the ACC based off of your ratings, because right now you do have Virginia at number 14. I think all of us who listen to this podcast and watch football don't believe that Virginia is the best team in that conference, but here we are. I'm curious how the ACC right now for you stacks up based off of your game grader.
Yeah, that was one of the angles I was looking forward to seeing what the committee would do. There was two real areas. One was the Miami versus Notre Dame debate, because they're projected both to finish 10-2, and you have that head-to-head win, Miami over Notre Dame. Of course, their losses are worse, but they have the head-to-head card. So I wonder what they would do with that. They really distanced them, though, putting Notre Dame 10th, Miami 18th. That's a signal right there. The other signal I was looking for was that the tug of war, the Big 12 versus the ACC, jockeying for positioning for maybe a second bid in the playoff. And it looks like the committee really faded the ACC compared to the AP, and the coaches sank them each a couple spots in their poll. And I agree with them. I mean, when you look at this conference, I think Miami's still the best team out there, maybe Louisville. But if you're looking at resume, they have the second loss, and they lost head-to-head to Louisville. So really a jumble of teams at the top. Yeah, you're right, though. Looking at my game grader, UVA is all the way down at 30th in the country. So this is one of those where they're grinding close wins, and you know, you credit the W, but looking ahead, I don't see it maintaining. So I've got them all the way down 7th in the conference, 30th nationally. Yeah, and I would also say keep an eye on Pittsburgh, and they must be really kicking themselves that they blew that backyard brawl in September, a game they should have won. Because now they found their quarterback, Mason Heinschel. They're 5-0 with him, playing really sound football both sides of the ball, but they're anchored down by that second loss. So, but anyways, a wide-open race. I think they're a one-bid league now.
I agree. I think they are a one-bid league. Now, there is a scenario. Georgia Tech runs the table, beats Georgia, and then they lose in the ACC championship. I mean, every scenario has a what-if possibility. I don't envision that happening, and I think more and more we'll see these teams kind of eat each other up. But you're right, Pittsburgh, fascinating game next week against Notre Dame. And I think for Notre Dame, the fact that Pitt came in the top 25 is beneficial for their resume. But Pitt will know what they are, Brett, as they have Notre Dame at Georgia Tech, Miami to wrap up the regular season. So let's get into this week. And you actually are going to be hitting the road. I know you planned this out prior to the start of the season. It could not have worked out better. You are headed to Lubbock to see BYU and Texas Tech.
Yeah, absolutely. Hit the lottery with this road trip. You know, every year I try and get out to one or two new locations on the map. And last year I got a little bit lucky. I went to Nebraska, Colorado, and that was back when both were really still strong in the rankings. I got to see Nebraska's defense take care of Colorado. And then I was down at Georgia, Alabama last year, which at the time was a top five matchup. But anyways, this year got lucky again, because back in August we booked it. It was really to see Texas Tech. It was all about this big oil money transfer haul. I had a feeling this would be a special season for them. I didn't even look at the opponent at the time. I just wanted to get a home game in Lubbock. Fast forward a couple months, you have an undefeated BYU coming in there, a top 10 versus top 10 matchup, College game day in town. So really lucky. I think it's going to be a preview of the Big 12 title game. I think with Texas Tech, you still have the strongest team in the conference. Love their pass rush. Love their quarterback, Baron Morton, being back healthy. But yeah, I'm just really excited to see that part of the country. Never been down there, Lubbock. And then the night before, we're actually going to go to Odessa Permian, the high school that's been popularized by Friday Night Lights, the book, the movie. So see a hometown game at Ratliff Stadium. See that Mojo football program.
That'll be pretty phenomenal to go down to see the true Friday Night Lights. I don't know if Booby Miles is going to show up, but I just looked up. Permian 8-1 this year. So it looks like they're having a pretty darn good season. But as we look at this game, you know, the point spread is pretty high. And I think people are going to say, wow, this number is maybe too high, right? There's some 10.5s out there, 10. What do you make of this game from your numbers, BYU at Texas Tech? Because I won't say BYU is full on UVA this year, but they have had some fortunate moments. The numbers haven't really lined up on some of their performances. They should be getting LJ Martin back, which is a massive boost to their offense. What do you make of this number sitting at 10?
Yeah, you're right. It's almost like UVA 2.0. It's like a more advanced version of UVA, a little bit stronger than them, but similar path where they're grinding by close one-score wins each week. I mean, you credit this coaching staff. It's one of the best in the country in player development every year in my metrics. They really hit a home run at quarterback with Barrett Bachmeier. Remember back in the summer, Jake Retzlaff was thrown out of the school. They had to scramble and find somebody. They bring in a true freshman from Stanford who wasn't even there in spring ball, and he's been unbelievable at quarterback. So my numbers, they like, I like the 10.5. In fact, I have it around 12, 13 points. Texas Tech has just been a juggernaut in all my metrics, all my stats, you know, top 10 in almost every stat category. And when you watch them, you can see it. I mean, they have explosive athletes on the outsides. Their pass rush is one of the best I've seen. David Bailey could be, I think he was a Lombardi Award semifinalist. I wouldn't be surprised if he wins the thing. He's really strong there in the trenches. And then seeing Baron Morton back and getting back into the groove of it, that was important to me because he missed a couple games. Will Hammond was knocked out also, their backup. So a little bit of concern at quarterback, but they put that away last week by blowing out Kansas State. So I love Texas Tech here to cover, to win. It's their biggest home game since the Michael Crabtree moment against Texas. And I think they're going to really give their fans something to cheer for. So I think Texas Tech big here.
We had Brent Musburger on the podcast over the offseason. He was on the call of that game. The tiptoe down the sideline, electric atmosphere. I think that was Halloween. I mean, it was an incredible, incredible game. Great atmosphere, as you alluded to. And now game day will be there for a top 10 matchup. Yeah, I mean, you look at the situation brewing in the Big 12, and BYU, certainly undefeated, has a chance to make it a two-bid league, but they still have a road trip to Cincinnati, and if they were to make it to the Big 12 championship, I still think, ultimately, if it's Texas Tech, Brett, that emerges, it probably will be a one-bid conference. A team that I open up the podcast talking about is Oregon, and they head on the road to Iowa. Curious what you make of this spot here. Weather might be a little tricky. It's supposed to be a bit rainy, windy. So your typical Midwestern type of Saturday there. And Iowa, you got to give them credit. They were a team that really had an opportunity to beat Indiana in the middle of October there. So what do you make of this one? Iowa hosting Oregon on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because a couple of their resume points are similar. They both played Indiana to within about a score. I know the Oregon-Indiana was 10 points, but that was competitive. So they gave Indiana its two biggest tests of the year. And then against Penn State, they both grinded out close wins. Of course, the first one was Oregon at the Whiteout, that overtime win. And then Iowa, I think it was in Iowa City, ran away. They won 25-24 over Penn State. So both close wins over PSU. In this one, when you look at it statistically, Oregon is perfect across the board. I mean, they're all green in my numbers. That means top 10, top 25 and everything. Iowa is the same on defense, a top five unit by Phil Parker. Again, a great defensive coordinator. But offensively, it drops off the map. In fact, you have the number one passing defense, Oregon, against dead last passing offense, Iowa. So there's not going to be any throwing lanes for Mark Gronowski. To his credit, he's been great in the run game. Really a nice addition there. The quarterback design runs. I just don't think it's sustainable for four quarters against this defense. They're going to need all their turnover luck, their special teams luck with Caden Wiegen, one of the best returners in the country. I shouldn't even call it luck because that's kind of by design. They do this every game, every year since I've been covering college football. So they're going to need the usual Iowa magic to keep it competitive. So I like Iowa to go in there, cover the 5-6 point spread and start to bolster their resume. I will say Iowa is a different team. If you stopped watching them in September, they're coming in here pretty strong. They're in the top 10 of my last four game grader. I like to look at just the last four games. They're top 10 in that number. So both teams coming in hot, but I'm going to go Oregon.
Okay. Yeah. Just to clear things up, you said Iowa to go in there. So you are on Oregon here in this spot against the Iowa Hawkeyes. Another game that, you know, certainly takes a little bit of a hit. And I have not touched this game from a betting standpoint. I'm curious, when it comes to your numbers, how you quantify this game, because you've got Missouri hosting Texas A&M, but Missouri is going to be making the change at quarterback with Bo Prabula lost for the year. They're going to go to the true freshman, Matt Zollers. He's making his first career start. So before we dive into the matchup for you and the way that you go about, you know, your work, which is a lot of analytical, a lot of numbers, how do you quantify a shift at quarterback like what we'll see with Missouri on Saturday?
Yeah, so, you know, I don't track every single injury, but when there are significant ones, mostly quarterback, or when a whole position room gets crushed, like what we saw with Iowa State's cornerbacks, their two best defenders being knocked out, you need to do some manual adjustments, some downgrades. And what I do with quarterback switches like this, I'll downgrade them for a week. I'll do a temporary downgrade, see how they perform, because we haven't seen Zollers in a full game. We haven't seen the same thing with Nebraska, with Rayola out. We haven't seen Latif in a full game yet. So that's a missed history. So a little bit of a downgrade this week until I see what they look like in a full game, see what the offense looks like with them. So in the case of these two games, it did not change my prediction for Nebraska-UCLA. I still have Nebraska projected to win and cover that game in UCLA. So despite the quarterback injury, I still have them favored. With Missouri, it did flip the lean. I had originally had A&M by about 4 points. With this, I downgraded to about 7.5. So I do now lean A&M with the touchdown. So, yeah, I mean, when you look at it, though, there's some great points to Missouri's team still without the quarterback. I love their running back duo, Ahmad Hardy, one of the best runners in the country. And then, you know, they continue to stack these top 10 transfer hauls. You can see that on paper, but when you watch them, it's in that defensive line. They got some real future NFL freaks there in the trenches. So it's going to be a tough out for A&M, but I'm still going to lean Aggies here with the 6.5 or 7 points, just given the uncertainty at quarterback.
All right, Brett, as we wrap things up, as you look back at the playoff announcement or the first 12 teams being put in that bracket, or just as we've kind of made our way through the first two full months of the season, anything jumping out to you as we head into week 11 of the college football season?
Well, you know, there's some surprises. I think in August, I don't think anybody had Indiana making this kind of run. We have to step back and look big picture. A lot of people, me included, thought it might have been a one-year wonder last year. I thought they'd still be a top 25 caliber team, maybe like 8-4, 9-3. I did not think they'd be stronger in 2025. But then specifically with the rankings, I look at Utah still alive there. They're 13th. That showed the committee really, you know, values their resume, their blowouts every week. So they're going to remain a threat here. One more thing. A lot of teams are like one upset away. I found this pretty interesting. Like, I'm projecting forward, and I think that Oklahoma takes a loss against Alabama. Texas would probably lose against Georgia or A&M. But a lot of these teams, if you flip one game, this whole playoff map gets a lot different. Same with USC and Washington. If they were to go beat Oregon, now they would be projected to go 10-2. So I think this November, you know, high level, this November is fascinating because you have so many teams still in the mix to get to that 10-win mark to be considered a playoff contender. So, you know, it's college football. It's a new style of college football, but it's going to be exciting this month.
Brett, I'm jealous of the trip, man. That's going to be incredible, going down to Odessa Permian and then the game of the week, Texas Tech hosting BYU. Should be a blast. Looking forward to hearing about it next week on the pod. And just as always, especially as we get into the thick of it here in November, bowl season, all of that, how could people get their hands on Pick 6 Plus?
Yeah, thanks so much. Can't wait to get down there, try some Tex-Mex, some barbecue, and see some high school football. But yeah, Pick 6 Plus, it's a weekly stats and information package, comes out every Tuesday. If you sign up now, it's at discounted prices because we're mostly through the season. But we still have 4 regular season weeks. We have the conference title week and then a playoff week for all 4 rounds of that. So still plenty of content coming your way. You know, betting projections, situational splits, all that good stuff. Pick6previews.com or Pick6previews on Twitter.
You're screaming Eagles, man. Gave my Irish a little bit too much of a scare last week. I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all.
Yeah, you're probably having some 1993 flashbacks. Oh, man. So they competed. I'm impressed with BC. There's no moral victories, but I thought it'd be a blowout. I thought it'd be, you know, 30. I said on the podcast, 30 or 40 plus point margin there. So they fought well. Jeremiah Love, man, he flexed there at the end. He deserved it.
Yeah, that was quite the 94-yard scamper. Made me breathe a little bit easier, and then they missed an extra point, and I was still breathing into a paper bag. Brett, appreciate it, man. Safe travels. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it.
Follow him at Pick 6 Previews. That's going to do it for the podcast. We'll be back on Thursday with another VSiN College Football breakdown of the card with Matt Heumann. Thanks to Wyatt Tomchek and Ryan Hunter, our producers. Thanks to Wes Reynolds. I'm Tim Murray. This is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.